I'm Brian Ellison, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The holiday season may be ending, but things are just heating up at this hour on Capitol Hill. Soon Jefferson City and Topeka will begin to thaw, too. It's time to welcome in a new legislative season. In Missouri, Republican supermajorities retain their grip. With Eric Greitens in the governor's mansion, will they be able to make policy out of their big campaign promises? And across the border, a more moderate Kansas legislature enters the state house next week. If those in the center join forces, what will it mean for Governor Brownback? With a preview from political reporters across the region, we'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Well, at this very hour, the 115th Congress is convening with all the pomp and circumstance that follow an election, choosing a speaker, setting a tone. That same scene will play out on a more local level tomorrow in Jefferson City and next Monday in Topeka as lawmakers are sworn in and the sausage starts getting made. But just as in Washington, the election brought real changes to the dynamic in each of those capitals. And today on Up to Date, we're getting a preview of what this legislative session might hold. Joining us today here in the studio is Dave Helling, political reporter for the Kansas City Star. Hey, Dave.
Helping you make the sausage today.
That's what we do here at Up to Date. Also in our studio, KCUR, Sam Zeff, host of State House Blend Kansas, my friend and colleague. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Brian. Hoping for spicy sausage, I think, this year.
I shouldn't have introduced the breakfast meat metaphor, I think. Joining us by Skype from Topeka, covering the Kansas State House for the Wichita Eagle, is Brian Lowry. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me, Brian. You'll be happy to know I'm drinking out of my KCUR mug.
Your State House Blend mug.
My State House Blend mug, which was given by Sam Zeff, actually.
That's music to our ears, I tell you. And joining us from the studios of St. Louis Public Radio is Joe Manis, who covers politics there. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you? I enjoy being with a bunch of hams.
Oh, boy.
To add to the sausage.
Here we go.
I knew we shouldn't have gone down this road. Well, we're going to spend some time talking about both Kansas and Missouri today, but I want to start with a question that's probably on the minds of people in all 50 states. On the national level this year, we saw a pretty clear consensus that politics have changed a little bit with the election of Donald Trump as president. Does that apply to the states as well? Have politics changed in the state houses in Jeff City and Topeka? Dave, what do you think?
Well, I think that each state tells its own story, Brian. This legislature in Missouri and this legislature in Kansas will be different than the ones that preceded them. Kansas, I think, is the exception maybe that proves the rule across the country. There was definitely a rightward tilt in most states. Kansas, of course, moved back to the center and even arguably a bit to the left, and we'll see that in the next couple of months. So, I think that legislators at the state level are emboldened by the Trump victory. They'll push for things that might have been more difficult, say, even 10 or 15 years ago. I think we'll see that play out, particularly in Missouri. I don't think it's a wholesale change or some sort of dramatic national shift in the legislatures, at least in our area.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, what about the tone as well as the substance? Do you see in Kansas what we were seeing on the national level?
No, I think we've all written about this story. Dave's absolutely right. Kansas moved back towards the middle. There has been reporting that Sam Brownback, has been talking about crowing that Republican leadership wants to do at the national level, what they did in Kansas. I think that he is pretty lonely in that opinion in Kansas. I also think that there's going to be a more collegial tone in Topeka, at least at the beginning. Moderates, Democrats, even some conservatives, all talking about working together to solve some pretty massive problems. And that's talk we haven't heard in some time in Kansas.
Yeah, Brian Lowry, you were there at the State House as leadership selections were being made. Do you sense a different spirit as the legislators take their seats?
I think the biggest change is less of an ideological one and more of a practical one, which is that you no longer have a dominant faction. the legislature is basically split up into thirds. You've got a third of Democrats, a third of moderates, and a third of conservatives. So the truth is that nobody can get anything passed unless they work with somebody in another faction. And that's going to be the interesting thing to see, you know, exactly what comes out and how much muscle the really reinvigorated moderate faction flexes.
Joe Manis, you've been watching Missouri politics for a long time, and the situation is quite a bit different in Jeff City, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, we haven't seen such Republican control in Jeff City in decades. Even when Matt Blunt, who was the last Republican governor, was governor about 10 years ago, he didn't have the majorities that Eric Greitens is going to have in the General Assembly. And but in some ways, Missouri is sort of a mini version of what you're seeing in Congress, because Eric Greitens, who is the incoming governor, is an outsider. He's not part of the Republican establishment. Most of the Republican establishment in Missouri had backed somebody else for governor. So while they have some issues that the General Assembly and Greitens plan to work on together early on, there is a little bit of wariness. I mean, because he was, like Trump, talking about draining the swamp, and some of the Republican leaders thought he was referring to them. And yeah. And also, I mean, Greitens is a very shrewd character. He already is doing some things to kind of set a different tone. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Like, what do you mean, Joe? What's he doing to set a different tone?
Okay, well, for example, he did a training session with the Highway Patrol guys. He showed up in Ferguson and did a walk around with some pastors and elsewhere. And my colleague, Jason Rosenbaum, was the only reporter allowed to go along. He's doing this. He had lunch with a bunch of state office workers a few days ago, where he was just walking around the cafeteria. He's doing this thank you tour that's going across the state. Now, some critics might say he's being a bit pompous, but on the other hand, he's out there with people. He's trying to set a more of a personal tone, and I think to reach out to regular people who aren't in Jeff City. So in any case, it's not the same as what they generally do in Jeff City. So that's something I think that the Republicans are watching as well as the Democrats.
Yeah.
He hasn't been doing a lot of press conferences. He did one yesterday about police, but he's been just gradually building up his exposure. He's a best-selling author. He's a motivational speaker. He knows how to do this part. So it's going to be interesting to see how that meshes with the leaders in Jeff City.
Yeah, didn't take any questions at yesterday's announcement of the new public safety director, but it says he's going to at these thank you tour stops, including one we're heading off to this afternoon here in Kansas City. Dave Helling, do you think that's an apt comparison to Donald Trump, this campaign of Eric Greitens focused on big ideas and principles more than on specific policy proposals, and now even the way he's approaching his transition into office?
Well, right. I think Joe's exactly right. This outsider theme surrounding Governor-elect Greitens is very accurate. I would say that people will hear that and think, well, Eric Greitens is just like Donald Trump. I don't think they're alike in any way. I mean, Donald Trump is much more ad hoc. Eric Greitens seems much more calculated, much more focused, with a relatively coherent strategy, at least so far. Donald Trump seems to have none of those qualities. It's very much whatever he thinks when he rolls out of bed in the morning. But I do think that he, like Trump, will have a compliant legislature. Now, the key test of that will be on ethics reform, and I think that'll come pretty early, because Greitens has made some effort to say that he thinks there needs to be significant ethics reform in the legislature. The legislature in Missouri always talks a good game about doing that and then backs away to the extent possible. If Eric Greitens is to have influence over the Republican majority, then he needs, in my view, to pick an issue in which he can sort of exert his leadership, and I think ethics reform will be it, and we'll see fairly quickly whether that works.
Listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3, I'm Brian Ellison, here with Dave Helling and Sam Zeff and Joe Manis and Brian Lowry, and we're talking about the Missouri and Kansas legislative sessions just getting underway. Sam, is this what you're seeing over on the Kansas side as well?
Well, I mean, it's a completely, I think, different approach. I mean, you've got a completely fresh face in Eric Greitens coming into Jefferson City to be governor, a man who I covered a couple of times during the campaign, found him, if he's there's no doubt that he's a motivational speaker. He was, he captivated the audience. He's fun and interesting to listen to. You compare that to the chief executive in Kansas, lowest popularity rating in all of the country. Seems, I think some observers would suggest, disengaged, waiting to hear what he's going to do about a $350 million budget hole that has to be filled before July 1st. I don't think that the governor's mansions in either state could be any different than they are right now.
Can I just quickly add, Brian, the question I get more than any other is, why did, in essence, Kansas bounce back to the middle when everyone else went a little bit to the right? And I've written about this, and I think it's true, that the Kansas move to the middle was prompted by events, by overreach, by...
It had already made the move to the right, and
yes,
it was bouncing back.
And it bounces back because of overreach by Governor Sam Brownback and a very conservative legislature. And there is an enormous lesson in that in Jefferson City and in Washington, both of which are now under unitary control. One party controls both houses and the governor's mansion in Jefferson City and, of course, the White House. And to the extent that there is overreach in either place, the Kansas model, I think, applies, that eventually politically the state and the country will bounce back a little bit to the middle if lawmakers in Washington and Jeff City don't heed the Kansas message. If they do, if they moderate a little bit, if they reach for what's possible and not what their wildest dreams suggest they should, then I think they may end up suffering the fate that Republicans, conservative Republicans, faced in Kansas.
Well, I do want to get to some of those wildest imagination kind of proposals that might be out there. But before we leave the Trump presidency and transition, I want to ask one more question about it. It actually will affect some of the substance of the policies and the actions of the executive branch in both states going forward as well. So on the Missouri side, we saw Eric Greitens and Attorney General-elect Josh Hawley both campaigning pretty strongly against the federal government and talking about all the ways that they needed to protect Missourians from federal government overreach. Well, now the federal government's in going to be in significantly different hands. How's that going to affect what happens in Jefferson City, Joe Manis? Are they going to have to find some new bogeymen to pillory in their statements?
Well, I think it's going to depend what happens over the next couple months. One thing to note is that Josh Hawley, who is the incoming attorney general, is, like Greitens, an outsider who's never held public office before. Hawley also he used to be a clerk in the U.S. Supreme Court. He has very much a broader view of what the attorney general should do. So I think that he will be focusing a lot on going after Washington. And if it isn't one issue, he'll find another. I think, will be remaking the Missouri Attorney General's office a little bit. It'll be more like what it was under Bill Webster 30 years ago, I predict. So I think it's going to be very intriguing to see what happens in the first few weeks or months. Missouri did not expand Medicaid, and it won't. So there isn't that. I mean, they won't be trying to cut back on that. They are talking about trying to cut back on Medicaid anyway, but Missouri has the lowest eligibility in the country, so they probably can't do that. They're going to have to be dealing with a budget hole just as in Kansas, but it's a smaller one. So they're going to have things they have to deal with early on. So it's going to be interesting to see if they deal with the tax cuts some people want when they can't even implement the ones they approved 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff on their plate. And Greitens, while he's a very smart man, does not know state government. Now, he acknowledges that, and it's going to be interesting to see who he goes to try to quick learning curve for him.
Right. On the Kansas side, obviously, we've seen already some change in the kind of leadership, at least on the Senate side, that is representing Republicans there. Sam, explain something to me. I listened to you talk to moderate Republicans on State House Blend Kansas fairly often. A lot of them represent Johnson County. On many issues, they have common ground with Democrats, particularly with their critiques of the Brownback administration. Why do these moderate Republicans and Democrats not join forces, at least more substantially, to form a coalition and maybe elect an entirely different kind of leadership?
Yeah, I think it boils down to their Republicans first and foremost. And they're going to try to formulate as much as they can solutions and legislations and legislation within the caucus. It's not natural for Republicans and Democrats to necessarily work together to move legislation through. So I think that you'll see some things come out of the Republican caucus. You've seen Senator Jim Denning, who's going to be the majority leader from Overland Park, say, you know, we're going to close the LLC loophole. I think that's a pretty easy lift. Now, what happens, that's
the
not going to
LLC loophole is something from the Brownback administration's tax proposals that
that exclude LLCs, farmers, S corporations from paying
Bill Self.
Mostly Bill Self, from mostly paying income state income tax. I think that's going to be a pretty easy thing to get done. Will Sam Brownback go along with it? I think that's a little bit of a question. But that's not going to get you all the money that you need this fiscal year at all. And going forward, you're going to have to find money somewhere else, either by raising taxes or cutting the budget. And I think that's when you're going to see what's going to happen between moderates and conservatives, which way they're going to, you know, which way they're going to go, and how the Democratic caucus, especially in the House, will fit into all of that.
Brian Lowry, as you watched the Kansas leadership selections made last month, are there messages there? Does that tell us anything about what to expect from the coming session?
Well, I think you need to keep in mind that Ron Reichman was elected Speaker of the House. He's a conservative. Susan Weigel retained her Senate presidency. She's a conservative. So the one thing I want to tell everyone to remember is conservatives didn't go away. They are still a substantial faction in the Kansas legislature, and they are still probably the dominant faction in the Republican Party. Now, what the moderates can do is they can use the threat of teaming up with the Democrats as a way to move the conservatives towards the middle, because together the Democrats and moderates can outnumber the conservatives. So there's always going to be these delicate diplomatic moves where you're going to have these negotiations within the Republican Party, and you're going to have a lot of back channeling with the Democrats. And, you know, what you do hear from Republican leaders is that they do want to get Republican solutions. And so that's going to be the real, as far as the sausage making goes, question of the legislative session is how much common ground can Republicans find with each other? Because there's a broad range of political philosophy within that party itself.
I'm so glad we were able to bring sausage back into the conversation.
Well, the other thing, though, to keep in mind is, and I think this is going to be the most interesting and compelling storyline of the entire Kansas session, is whether or not legislators, in essence, solve problems in a piecemeal approach, taking up the LLC exemption in isolation, or whether there's a global agreement in which nothing is settled until everything is settled. Because you do talk to lawmakers who sort of say, look, we'd like to get past this, finally, by adopting a more global approach. Yet that's extraordinarily difficult to do. There are so many moving parts, so many different estimates. Spending becomes part of that. Sam's right. It's an easy lift to do the LLC exemption. But if that's all you do, you don't solve the problem. So the question will be, do you trade LLC for X, Y, or Z somewhere else? Maybe, you know, reduced pension contributions or cuts to K-12. I mean, I'm just making stuff off the top of my head. But whether there is linkage among all these issues, or whether they'll do it one thing at a time and then sort of look up when the smoke clears in April and May, that'll be the central, to me, dynamic of the entire session.
I want to jump to the Missouri side, too, when we're talking about leadership. The changes there are different. There's a different kind of dynamic. You don't watch so much the split between conservatives and moderates in the Republican caucus. And when we looked at the leadership selections made in those caucuses, we really saw more people just moving up to take their turn, including Gail McCann Beatty of Kansas City, who now leads the Democrats in the House. Joe Manus, is there anything happened in the off season that you think we should be noting as the new session gets underway in terms of leadership, people to watch in the legislature?
Well, I think the Democrats are still trying to rebuild their bench.
Yes.
Jay Kummel, who had been the Democratic leader in the House, is now in the Senate. I mean, will be in the Senate the next 24 hours. Be interesting to see how he sort of fits in. He's also a labor official. So the Democrats are definitely on the short shrift in both chambers, and they don't have a whole lot of marquee personalities, at least that can run things. They have some.
They don't have a whole lot of personalities. Period. There's just not that many of them in the Senate.
We have Maria Chappelle Nadal, whose district represents Ferguson, who often creates some turmoil in order to get certain issues done. So you have some people who have particular agendas, and I'm not saying it's bad, but the point is that it's not like you have leaders who can get a lot of people behind them. Now, on the Republican side, Ron Richard, who is the Senate leader now, who's older, and Todd Richardson, who's the House Speaker, who's younger, both of them are conservative, but they both are somewhat pragmatic. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see how, especially Richardson, how he sort of gets the Republicans to stick together or at least not go crazy. He tends to be he could be a moderating force, even though he's not a moderate, just because he has a lot of support and a lot of he knows how to. I don't know if it's his manner or what. Now, there have been a number of people who hope that Richardson runs for statewide office in a few years. I'm not sure if he will, but that he's going to be someone to watch. He doesn't, at least overtly, doesn't have some of the problems that plagued other Missouri House speakers and kind of cut their political futures out from under them.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we will take a look at the issues, the policy items, the agenda for both the Kansas and Missouri legislatures, taxes and schools and budget, yes, guns, right to work on the Missouri side. It all will define the 2017 sessions. You can catch up with our political press roundtable and join their conversation by calling 816-235-2888. What do you hope to see from lawmakers? What are you worried they might do? 235-2888. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. And welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. We're talking today about Missouri and Kansas politics, specifically the legislative sessions just getting underway in both state houses in the next week. Dave Helling is here from the Kansas City Star, Joe Manis from St. Louis Public Radio, Brian Lowry from the Wichita Eagle, and Sam Zeff from right here at KCUR. We want you to join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. What are your questions? What are your hopes for legislators in Jeff City and Topeka? 235-2888. Let's jump to the Missouri side for just a couple minutes. They convene tomorrow at noon. Obviously, Eric Greitens' election changes everything in terms of legislation that might come out of that body. Jay Nixon's veto pen was the most overridden in recent state history, but he did still manage to stop some bills that Republicans weren't in lockstep behind, including right to work. That won't be the case now. Joe Manis, in addition to right to work, tell us what you expect to see happen with that, and what other topics might legislators take up right out of the gate?
Well, I think right to work is going to happen real quick because Greitens has promised to sign it, and I think this is one issue where he and the General Assembly can be on the same page. I also have heard from a lot of people that they have promised major Republican donors who are now affected by campaign donation limits as of a month ago, they have promised them that they will do certain things within the first 30 days. Which is a rather intriguing element.
Can you be more specific? What certain things?
Well, what I have told is that they have promised David Humphreys, who is a major donor in Joplin, that right to work will pass quickly, and then if there's other things that he wants, they're going to try to do that quickly. So you're going to have right to work done real quick. Greitens does want ethics to come up quickly. There may at least be some lip service on it, at least early on. some of the things they'll agree on, some things they won't. He's proposing that for every year that you're in the General Assembly, that would be a wait year before you could become a lobbyist. In other words, if you were in the General Assembly 8 years, you have to wait 8 years to become a lobbyist. That sounds nice. It ain't going to happen.
DOA, dead on arrival,
right.
I think.
But one of the things he's pushing, which I think will have be receptive, is some laws to help police as far as like they're talking about a blue alert, things like that, to make it more public when there's a police are under threat. Or he wants to show that the state has law enforcement's back. That's important to him. He's a former Navy SEAL. He made a big deal about that in his press conference yesterday. So I think – and that was something he also made a big deal about on the campaign trail. So I think that's something that may be done fairly quickly because, again, that's something that the rural legislators and Greitens can agree on. One of the things that people don't notice is that the General Assembly for a few years had a strong St. Louis presence of people in leadership. Now there's virtually none. However, the governor, for the first time in decades, is from St. Louis. He actually lives in the city of St. Louis. And that's something I think that many voters weren't even aware of. And I think the point being is that Greitens does have some awareness of urban needs, urban issues. And I think that could help him or hurt him with the General Assembly, which is dominated by rural interests. And the rural-urban divide in Missouri is legendary and has been going on for decades.
Kansas Cityans will still go wanting for leadership.
Which is not an unusual situation for the people of Kansas City. The governor-elect, however, has been very clear in the last couple of weeks that he opposes any state tax credits for a new soccer stadium in St. Louis. And that is an incredibly interesting and important marker that he's laying down, because I do think in the last couple of, or the first couple of weeks, there will be an effort to restrict tax credits and other economic development tools that Governor Nixon used extensively during his two terms in office as a way to save money for the state. There will be withholdings that Governor-elect Greitens will have to announce fairly quickly. There may be some pressure for tax reductions, broad tax reductions in this General Assembly. At the same time, transportation, Brian, remains unresolved, and even some rural areas are starting to talk about finding some way to get more money into roads and bridges in the state of Missouri. There will always be abortion. There will always be guns in the first month. It's a pretty full agenda. That's why I say I think ethics reform for Greitens will be an important marker to show how much leadership he does or doesn't have.
And Dave,
with
do
the
you,
legislature.
Do you see daylight between Governor-elect Greitens' agenda and the legislative leaders' priorities? At this point, at least the game that they're talking is that they're all pretty much in lockstep with
right,
a strong
and I think that'll
agenda.
Be true, except on ethics, which I think is, you know, as Joe points out, the idea of staying out of lobbying for 8 years if you've served 8 years will not be high on the agenda of most of the leadership of the legislature in Jefferson City. But I do think Republicans understand that they do have a chance to govern. They don't have to worry about Jay Nixon for the next 4 years, and they'll want to produce. Now, what that production looks like, we don't know. Again, I suggest it might involve tax reductions, tax credit reform, and perhaps some attempt to solve the transportation challenges.
As we jump back to the Kansas side, the last few sessions of the Kansas legislature have really been defined by a tug of war on taxation. We've talked about the LLC loophole. In fact, we have a question about that from Frank in Lawrence. Frank, welcome to Up to Date.
Thanks. Yeah, the question is the LLC loophole, which some people had tried to get a special session in November and December to get that taken care of so it would take effect this year, because when they do it in this session, it won't take effect until the following year. How will that affect the budget, because they're trying to cut the funds?
Good question. Sam Zeff?
Well, we don't know what they're going to cut, if anything. I mean, Sam Brownback has said that there's not going to be cuts to K-12. There's going to be a structurally balanced budget. Of course, the devil in that will be in the details. Frank is right that if they close the LLC loophole, that wouldn't take effect until next year, which means that they're going to have to find some way to find $350 million. There's been some chatter about making it it retroactive to 2016. That doesn't feel quite right. I don't know. Maybe Brian has a different thought on that. But he's right. I mean, closing the LLC loophole is going to be one of the first things that the legislature tackles. But also, as Dave has mentioned, it's got to be part of a much bigger package of things, whatever that is, to really structurally fix the budget going in to the next fiscal year.
Thanks, Frank, for that call. He called us at 816-235-2888, and you can too. Brian Lowry, besides closing the LLC loophole, what's on the short list of things that Republican leaders hope to get done this year?
So I do want to follow up on one thing Sam said, which is you're never going to get retroactive tax legislation passed. That's a certainty. But the key is that after we fill the $350 million budget hole we face for the current fiscal year, we still have a $580 million budget hole for the next fiscal year, which starts in July. So there's going to be definitely a look at a lot of things on taxes, including possibly even some adjustments to income tax rates, possibly another hike to liquor or cigarette taxes. On the spending side, I think you are going to see some efforts to look for areas that, aside from K-12, where you can start to curb costs a little bit. There is this efficiency study that came out last year that I've heard referred to hundreds and hundreds of times by lawmakers across the political spectrum. They haven't actually enacted much of that. And so the question is, are they actually going to pursue some of those policies? But other than taxes, education is going to be the dominant theme of the session, because we're going to have a ruling on from the Kansas Supreme Court about whether or not school funding is adequate. And even aside from that, the block grants that Kansas schools are currently funded by expire at the end of June. So education is going to be one of the dominant issues, as it always is here in Kansas, where we're going to actually have to figure out how do we want to structure our school finance system, and how can we pay for it?
Right. Dave and Helly? The central dilemma will be whether you try to solve education in and of itself, or whether you make that part of a grand bargain that encompasses all of these issues, which makes it more difficult, but perhaps easier at the end to cobble together a legislative majority for something. It may be that the moderates from Johnson County don't like the tax piece, but may like the education funding piece, or it could be the reverse. They don't like the education funding piece, but do like the revenue measures. So that's where I think, and maybe Brian and Sam could chime in on this, where I think the apparent lack of leadership from Governor Brownback is the most critical, because I think he's got to be a major player
right. In
putting that, or at least a player, and to date he has not been that at all, and that makes a grand bargain more difficult.
I think that is the question. I mean, Sam, remind us as you answer that, what is required of the legislature at this point because of the Supreme Court ruling in the Bannon case?
Well, we don't know what the Supreme Court's going to rule on adequacy. We do expect it to be a big number. Traditionally, the Supreme Court has not come back in a ruling and said, this is the number and this is how you have to do it. They give the legislature a framework in which to make that solution. But it could be up to $1 billion, $800 million, $900 million. You know, once you start talking in hundreds of millions of dollars.
Who's counting?
A little here, a little there. But it's all complicated, as Dave mentioned, that the block grant scheme that we've been working under for the last 2 years is going away. So a new school funding formula is going to have to be written. Most educators would want to go back to the basically the old formula. It's a per pupil expenditure, but extra money for, you know, if the child is an English language learner, they have a long trip on a bus out in Western Kansas. Conservatives will want to put into that formula some sort of outcome based part of the formula, right? So ACT scores go up, you get more money. Your graduation rate goes up, you get more money. There also might be some penalties in there. It's all very, very complicated, writing the school funding formula, trying to figure out how to satisfy the Kansas Supreme Court on adequacy in the Gannon case, and making that all fit into just a miserable budget year.
And where does the governor fit into this? Dave questioned Governor Brownback's leadership in this matter. Is he coming out there with proposal? Does he have a plan?
Well, he has not. He's actually said he's not going to write a school funding formula. He's going to leave that to the legislature. He does have to submit a balanced budget, and we'll see how that looks when it comes out. I will say that last year, when they were trying to solve the equity issue of the Gannon school funding suit, a much easier fix, he was generally absent as lawmakers and educators actually came together to come up with that fix.
Brian Lowry, were you trying to jump in there?
Yeah, it's actually been a real point of tension between the governor and even conservative Republicans that he's not taking a more active role in addressing the budget issues. There were a lot of lawmakers calling on him to make some tough budget cuts, which he can do through his executive power ahead of the session. He put his foot in the ground and said he wasn't going to do anything until lawmakers convened. So, you know, we really haven't seen much about what he wants to do. We've heard a couple drips and drabs that he may be looking to tap this long-term investment fund, but we haven't heard anything about a permanent solution from him, and he's certainly backed off making the really hard cuts that some lawmakers think you have to do just to get through the fiscal year.
I have heard some talk. I think there was a story out of Wichita over the weekend, Brian Lowry, that suggested the governor is considering additional sales taxes in Kansas. Have you heard that at all? I mean, I find it hard to believe they would try that again.
I've heard that they may look at what we sometimes call sin taxes, things like liquor and tobacco, and increasing the sales tax on those items. But the key is, it's still unclear whether or not the governor is going to take a real lead role on the budget side and the tax side. I actually would expect that it really is going to come down to the legislature. And so I think the guy who you really should be looking at is Ron Reichman, the newly elected Speaker of the House, who served as budget chairman for the past 2 years.
While we're talking about education, I don't want to leave Missouri out of this. Joe Manis, you and I were both on a conference call with Governor-elect Greitens senior advisor Austin Chambers, as he laid out the governor's legislative priorities for the year. And he sort of dangled this sort of tantalizing idea that the governor is exploring with legislative leaders the possibility of educational savings accounts, and then also other items that would promote choice in education. What's he talking about there? What might we see on the education front in Missouri?
Well, I'm not sure if he knows exactly. I don't mean to be dismissive. There's a couple things. The state treasurer, for decades, there's been a savings thing for college. So I'm not sure if he's going to try to I've kind of pressed his staff, but they haven't really said yet. They're going to try to come up with something similar on the lower level, K through 12. But here's something he needs to recognize. Missouri's constitution has very strict provisions that bar any spending of public money on private or parochial schools or any sort of education. So he would likely need, depending on what he does, frankly, anything significant, he'd probably need a constitutional amendment. There had been a provision that had been put into a school transfer law a couple years ago that Nixon had vetoed twice, that tried to make it so in failing school districts, students could transfer to parochial schools. The governor had emphasized that he believed that that was unconstitutional. And the tobacco tax proposal, which died in November election,
right,
the biggest one, did have a provision that would have used some public money for public and parochial schools. And because it was a constitutional amendment, that was a way, sort of a backdoor way to get that in. And, of course, that died significantly for a number of reasons. But that provision was one of the reasons. So I think Greitens is going to be talking a lot to legislators, but I think he's going to find that it's going to be very difficult to do what he might envision without having a vote of the public?
Sam Zeff?
Very quickly. Unusually, Eric Reitens will have three appointments to the State Board of Education. Usually, they rotate off one a year, but there's been a couple that have been held over. Now, they have nothing to do with school funding, but they have everything to do with curriculum and other things to having to do with education. So as he puts his mark on the State Board of Education, this could move some more conservative theories into that board. But he's going to immediately have those three appointments if he wants them.
Also, we'll have some vacancies to fill on the Board of Curators for the University of Missouri. We should mention, by the way, that in national news, the Republican effort to reduce the power of the Office of Congressional Ethics has been removed from their proposal. They've scrapped the plan as the new Congress has convened this afternoon in Washington, D.C. There'll be more updated details on that coming up at the top of the hour from NPR on Here and Now. I want to ask all four of you, as we sort of take a big picture view of what's happening in the General Assembly in Missouri and in the legislature in Kansas, what are we missing? What should we be watching? What might happen that's different than conventional wisdom might lead us to expect in this year's session? As you take a look at it, Dave Helling?
Well, I think there's a chance this year that in Missouri, that local control of Kansas City, Missouri police might advance. It's been a controversy in this community for a quarter century, and you do get the sense that now some rank-and-file police officers are more interested in local control. And I think Eric Greitens might be amenable to at least listening to that argument. It's been a Rex Singfield argument. It happened in St. Louis. So I think that might surprise us.
The idea that it's all about having the officers back, supporting law enforcement.
Right, and that the best way to do that is to have the control of the department in the hands of locally elected people rather than the governor himself. Now, governors are very loath to surrender the ability to appoint police board members. It's a pretty good chit to hand out. And so Greitens may be of both minds on this one. But I think that could be a surprise. In Kansas, I'm not sure. The biggest surprise may be the absence of the governor from any legitimate discussion of how to address the challenges facing the state. I think that by and large, Brian Lowry is right, that they're going to write the governor out. He's got 2 years left. He doesn't seem to have any solutions at hand. They'll just write him out, cut their own deal.
Brian Lowry, what are you expecting that maybe not everyone's expecting?
Yeah, I mean, just piggybacking on what Dave said, I think you will see some either veto-proof legislation or maybe even attempts at veto overriding if the governor does get into the fray. One thing, though, I'd note that will be maybe a little bit of a surprise based on what we've seen the past few years in Kansas is on guns. This may be the first year that I've covered the Kansas legislature where we haven't seen a loosening of gun laws. In fact, I think there is some momentum to at least push back the implementation of allowing concealed firearms on college campuses.
Yeah, yeah.
Under current law, KU, K-State, Wichita State, they would all have to open up their campuses to concealed firearms starting in July. I think there's going to be an effort to push that back at least 3 years, and I think it might have the votes to pass.
Sam Zeff, I know guns is an issue you follow. Are there others?
Yes, I want to first say that I think Brian's absolutely right. I think there's going to be a big push to repeal the campus conceal and carry. I think the other thing that's hanging out there in the sausage factory over there in Topeka is just how long Sam Brownback may or may not be there. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier, who is from Overland Park, he's a plastic surgeon, been in the legislature and now lieutenant governor twice, has taken a much more active stance in this pre-legislative session. It'll be interesting to see how much we'll see him walking the halls of the legislature and trying to have an impact. There's still lots of rumors out there about what's going to happen with Governor Brownback, whether he would go to work in some capacity in the Trump administration. He's clearly not going into the cabinet. Or whether he would end up in Washington in some sort of think tank or other job. So I think the other wild card here is does Sam Brownback make it through the entire session? If not, what is the Collier administration going to look like?
Joe Manis, back over on the Missouri side, anything you're expecting that maybe isn't top of the headlines?
Well, one of the things that passed in November was a photo allowing photo ID requirements at the polls. The General Assembly had passed a bill, an implementation bill, over Nixon's veto. Now, one of the things that people don't realize is that the governor controls the election boards in the major cities and in the county. So St. Louis County, Jackson County, Kansas City, St. Louis. And so immediately there's going to be some changes on those boards. And that can affect things big time as far as elections in the state. Now, he's already put in former state rep Rick Stream, who's a budget guy, in as, in effect, running the St. Louis County election board, which is interesting because Stream lost the county executive's race just a couple years ago. So I think Greitens may have a bigger role than some people think as far as how this new amendment is implemented. I think it's going to be more it could have broad ramifications as far as what IDs are allowed. There's still a fight over real ID in Missouri because we have to change that or people can't use their driver's license to get on airplanes. So all of this is kind of connected, and I think it's something people haven't been paying attention to.
Before we go, we've got a few big dates coming up. Next Monday, January 9th, is the inauguration of the Missouri governor. We'll have live coverage here on Up to Date on KCUR. The day after that is the Kansas State of the State address. These are days filled with pomp and circumstance. Is there anything of substance that actually matters about these days, or are these days to celebrate?
The State of the State addresses are very important. I mean, it's the marker for when budgets go down and priorities are set. Eric Greitens' State of the State, which will come a little bit later,
yeah,
will be fascinating, right? Fascinating to watch, as will Sam Brownback's, because if he, as we suggest, is backing away a little bit, maybe we'll get a lot of platitudes and no specifics. We'll have to see.
Sam Zeff?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think that it'll be interesting to see the Brownback State of the State will come before he releases his budget. So we'll see how much information he's going to let go then, and also what his other priorities are going to be.
Eric Greitens will be the same. He said he would not release the budget in connection with the State of the State address.
Right.
Brian Lowry?
Well, I think one thing we might be able to glean from the State of the State is where the governor really stands on taxes. If he comes out strong, defending his tax policy, touting it, I think that's a sign that he may be poised for some battles with the legislature. If he really doesn't address the issue, it could be a sign that he's willing to concede some things.
And Joe Manis, a very quick final word.
Okay, well, Greitens has gotten rid of the inaugural parade, so that's really a big deal in Jeff
City.
Everybody
stays warm.
But
don't forget,
true.
There's a nationally known music star whose name is not being announced who will perform at the inauguration. Something to look forward to. Hey, my thanks to Dave Helling of The Star, KCUR Sam Zeff, Brian Lowry of the Wichita Eagle, and Joe Manis of St. Louis Public Radio. Thanks to all of you.
You bet.
Thank you for having us.
Of course.
Thank you.
You can listen to previous programs and download our podcasts at kcur.org/uptodate. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR UpToDate, and I'm at PTS Brian. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Coy Duggar. I am Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.